LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening, and I once again forgot to turn the microphones on.
But it's working now.
It is working now. My name is Jim Christina. I am the host of LA Talk Radio's Writer's Block. I'm in studio tonight with the charming, wonderful, intelligent Bobby Jean Bell.
Howdy.
We call her Giggles.
Among other things.
I never call that to your face. Ever, ever, ever. I'm not that brave. Anyway, we are here in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California, bringing you again one of the fascinating, fastest growing, wonderful literature radio shows in the United States. We actually got an email. Jerry got an email like that with something to that effect.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it is fun.
We have listeners.
We have a lot of them,
and
actually.
We thank you for tuning in.
We have a lot of them, and we do thank you for tuning in. And I just want to give you a real quick heads up that The Writer's Block is brought to you now by Tuscany Bay Books, which is a division of Black Book Publishing, Black Dog Publishing. And Tuscany Bay is for new writers. If you are a new writer and you want your stuff edited, proofread, printed, whatever it is that you want done with it, you get a hold of us at Black Dog Publishing / Tuscany Bay Books, and we can do all of that for you, and we are strictly for new writers. So if you are a new writer and you're struggling and you don't know where to go, give us a call. The number there is 805-795-3165, and you can talk to me, or you can talk to Richard Palinelli, who is also a writer of some renown in science fiction. He can help you guide, and we can help you guide, and give us a call. And also brought to you by Out West. It's your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyles. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include Scully Leather Company, Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Their toll-free number in Santa Clarita is 877-340-9378. And if you want tickets for their monthly Out West concert series, which is the fourth Friday of every month, that number for tickets is 661. This is a direct number, 661-347-9700. Their tickets are not that... 20.
Tell us that you heard it on the Writer's Block, and the $25 ticket becomes 20 like magic.
Oh, and that's pre-sale.
We actually like the reservation, but you can pay at the door.
Gotcha. And of course, the Writer's Block is also brought to you by Target Freight Management. And since 2009, Target Freight has a full truckload service, TFM truckload. That's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you're an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible, is what you want. One stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. And I just was informed that they have a new program that is now, it's the first program that has been copywritten and patented on a computer program in like 25 years.
Wow.
And it is theirs, and it is now available. I don't think it's cheap, But get a hold of Target Freight. Again, that number is 888-653-1323 for information on their new programming. So, that out of the way, we have, oh my gosh, we just got so much going on.
I know.
I just love busy weeks. Bobby and I, before the show, were talking, actually we were in the producer's office, and we were talking about how weeks just seem to fly by. You know, it's like we just got off the air 20 minutes ago, and here we are again in another beautiful Thursday night.
Yep.
On the 36th floor.
And we've read another book.
And we've read yet another book.
And we're starting the next one.
And we are going to be talking to that young lady here in just a second. And her name is Maggie Espinoza. And Maggie Espinoza is a, she's done so much. She's a podcaster and, gosh, she just does everything. And I'm trying to find her sheet here.
Here, I have it right here.
Oh, there she, well, I have it right here.
Okay,
as
good.
Well.
Okay.
And, she is an award-winning travel journalist, an author whose coverage includes national and international publications such as USA Today, syndicated radio interviews. That's what you'll be doing tonight, Maggie. You'll be syndicating a radio interview. In reporting for ABC, the CW, and NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. Wow. That's big time. Her first book, The Privileged Pooch, Luxury Travel with Your Pet in Southern California. Espinoza has journeyed to five continents and has lived in Europe and the Caribbean. She's a member of the Society of American Travel Journalists, which requires certain qualifications to join. I'm absolutely positive that walking 800 miles to every mission in the state is not one of them. And was the president of the San Diego Press Club, one of the largest of its kind in the country. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Ms. Maggie Espinoza. Maggie, you with us? Hello? Are you with us, Maggie?
I am.
Okay, hey!
Welcome, welcome.
Anyway.
Hello!
Hello!
How are you doing?
You know what? We're doing so fine. It's just unbelievable.
Great!
We have so many questions to ask you. The first one, of course, being, why in the world would you want to walk 800 miles to 21 missions in the state of California, or the state of confusion, if you wish? That's a long way to hump.
Yeah, it is. I know. Because I'm a nut job. That's why.
Apparently.
I've come to the conclusion. It's like, I don't know.
Well, you
to be honest, why I did it is because I thought, I'm not from here. Bobby and I were just saying, we're both East Coasters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I am from Pennsylvania. And so I am from history. I mean, real history. Liberty Bell, you know, Independence Hall, all that. And I came out here to California, and I was like, where's the history? And so somebody said, oh, our history is the missions. So I said, oh, that's neat. I'd love to see them. Well, most people drive them. But I decided,
yeah,
let's try something different, and I'm going to walk them.
You know, Maggie,
and that's how it started.
You know, Maggie, it's so interesting because I think growing up on the East Coast, even in school and going through at the time that I went through school, we didn't really learn about the history of the West, except maybe from after the Civil War, you know, or Gold Rush time and so forth. And it isn't until you come here that you really learn that California and the Southwest have a history that predates what we know on the East Coast. It predates the Pilgrims. It predates everything that you and I probably grew up with as those historic moments.
That is so true. I literally had not heard of the missions at all. And I think, wow. You know, when we heard about the West, we heard Lewis and Clark coming
across.
Discovery. You know, we heard about that kind of thing going on, but we really didn't get any deep into Western history, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought it was fascinating. I thought this would be a great way. And let me tell you, it was the trip of a lifetime.
You mean to tell me that even on the East Coast, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with all the Amish, that you never, ever, ever heard of the swallows coming back to Capistrano?
Not really.
Honest to God?
And I mean, if we did, I don't think we put two and two together.
Exactly.
A bird came to a little town in California. I didn't really realize it was the mission, San Juan Capistrano, on that. I don't think I did. I never put it together.
I actually was amazed. The one time I went to San Juan Capistrano when I was a kid,
yeah,
you know, when we all pile out of the car, we want to see the swallows. One, saw a swallow. I don't know if it was the last one out or the first one in. But
well, you know, they just renovated the San Juan Capistrano Mission.
I did
not
know
beautiful.
That.
They renovated a couple years ago. And when they did that, the swallows were gone for a little while. They got worried, but now they're starting to come back.
Well, they had to have torn out their nests and stuff then.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. Right. Yeah.
Because they do, they built nests. They had thousands and thousands of nests up in the rafters up on top of the mission. So,
yeah.
It's a small wonder they came back. Why build another house if you just move into your old one?
So when you told people, I'm going to do this, I'm going to take this walk, and we are talking about your book, On a Mission. When you told friends and family, what kind of response did you get?
Besides laughter.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it was funny because I told my husband, because what had happened is I had read an article in the magazine about a gentleman from Oregon, a retired school teacher, 72 years old, that had walked all the missions. He came and walked them all sequentially for 55 days straight. I thought, oh my word, that sounds great. So I said to my husband, I'm going to walk the missions. And he said, have fun. Yeah, we
I'll
have been
see
married
you when
25
you get
years,
home.
So he doesn't even ask anymore. He just says, have a good time.
Did you say, well, do you want to come with me? And did he say,
no.
Yes, no, that's so funny, Bobby, because I said, oh, come on, you got to walk a little bit of it. He goes, I will walk the last 5 miles with you. That's it. So what I did is I thought, you know, I'm going to take this as a time that I'm going to be able to spend time with friends and family and that kind of thing.
Sure.
And because I work as a travel journalist and I do tours around Southern California and Mexico and that kind of thing, I couldn't take 55 days straight like the retired teacher, Butch,
right.
His name is Butch, that how he did. So I thought, well, how am I going to do this? So I thought, bing, bing, bing. I had the great idea that I was going to have 4 days each month I was going to walk, and I was going to take 12 months to do it, and that would be able to, I'd be able to cover it then.
Sure.
So I thought that'll work great. So I sent out an email, and you know, I'm thinking nobody is going to do this with me. They're all going to go, no, thanks, have fun. I was shocked how many people responded, oh, that sounds really fun. Okay, I'll walk the May month with you, and I'll walk, you know, when you're going through Santa Barbara, and I'll walk. I had so many people sign up to walk with me, and so I was like, great. And off I went. I started in the month of November with a good friend of mine right in San Diego, where I live, and we started the San Diego Mission. Excuse me?
Go ahead.
No, we're listening. We're absolutely riveted.
We're snorking.
Okay, so I started the San Diego Mission, and I had heard that you have, it's the first mission that was built. So, you know, and all that worked out great. You live here, first mission built, that's the way to go. It's the southernmost mission, and I heard, okay, you have to have a pilgrim's blessing, you know? So I contacted the priest there, and I said, okay, here's the scoop, and, you know, I talked to the priest receptionist, and I said, I need to have a pilgrim's blessing. They said, show up the day that you're leaving at 7:30. The father will be there. We walk in, and we said, Father, we need a blessing. What for? We're doing a pilgrim's walk 800 miles. He's like, what? And I thought, you're a priest. I mean, you shouldn't be that surprised.
Come into the confessional.
Yeah, it's
we'll
almost
talk.
Like they should have, every priest should have had to do it like Father Sarah.
Yeah, like if you're surprised, maybe I shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was really wonderful, and he gave us a blessing, and off we went. We started off, you know, with that bum ba da dum. We're ready to go.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the start of the 800 miles.
Well, you know, I mean, little hint, none of the priests have walked it.
No. No. I am telling you, there's a couple like, you know, like friars and stuff like that have walked it in modern day.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when I believe you were also sharing your daily thoughts on Facebook. So you were using some social media throughout this this walk as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
I did. I went on social media at the end of each day of my walk. And the reason I wanted to do it at the end was because I felt like that was when it was the most real. You know, I would finish walking 22 miles. I was tired. I was hot. I wanted to be able to really put down the words that were the real words. I didn't want to wait until I'd get home from that leg of the trip and then kind of relive it, because you tend to put rose-colored glasses on. So so I would write every day. Well, unbeknownst to me, there was a group of people called the California Mission Walkers. They're called the CMW for short. They were following my posts. Obviously, this is a group of people who are huge mission enthusiasts, and they love the El Camino Real, which is the road that the missions are built on. So they were intrigued by this. So all of a sudden, I start getting, like, you know, on my thread in Facebook, people go, oh, well, you know what? You're going to be walking through Ventura, and my wife and I live in Ventura, and we would love to put you up while you're walking through Ventura and, you know, feed you. I'm thinking, what?
Feed me?
Yeah.
How interesting is that? I mean, never have met these people. And I said, sure. I said, I'm going to have, like, two friends walking with me that month. And they're like, that's fine. And so this started to become, I started to become like the Pied Piper. I would, like, be getting places, and there'd be like two or three people. Hey, we read your post. We'd love to walk with you today, or we'd love to put you up. And it was absolutely fascinating. Yeah. It was so wonderful. The people I met, I mean, it was just amazing. I always say the thing that I pulled the most out of this walk is that how good people really are. And really we hear all the time how not good people are. Yeah. It really, you know, the majority of the world is good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And just, you know, the people, it just was phenomenal. And that's what Facebook was doing. And then they would be walking about their, or blogging about their walk with me, and it became this really big thing.
Right.
Now, when you were doing, so each walk once a month, and it was over, say, 4 days, mm-hmm. sometimes you were put up by people you would meet or friends along the way. Did you camp out the other nights, or how did you take care of lodging?
Ew. I do not camp. My camping days are over. I'm 57 years old, so my camping days, I need a good night's sleep. And I especially knew that I needed a good night's sleep if I was then going to get up and, every, you know, 4 days in a row walk 22, 23 miles.
Right.
You know, it's like doing a marathon 4 days in a row. I thought, I can't be sleeping on the ground.
Right.
So what I would do is that I knew I was going to be, you know, so I'd say, okay, well, 22 miles will take me from, so for example, I left San Diego, and I knew I would make it as far as Cardiff. And so I made a reservation at a motel in Cardiff. So they knew I was going to be there. So I would make the reservation, so I knew I got it. I would get as far as Cardiff. Then the next day, I'd walk as far as Oceanside, where Camp Pendleton is. So I rented a little motel. So I did that throughout the walk. I had an idea of where I would end each day, and I would have a Motel 6 or something. It was never any, you know. Every once in a while, I said, okay, I've just walked like 250 miles. I'm treating myself. When I got into Santa Barbara, I stayed at the Belmont El Encanto.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this place?
I have. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know. I mean, it is like 5-star. It was just absolutely wonderful. And I show up there, I'm all sweaty, I look homeless.
Your feet are bleeding,
there,
leaving marks on the carpet.
Desk, and they're probably like, I think you got the wrong hotel. I like, nope, I got the right one.
Yeah. You know, so, anymore, my idea of roughing it is when the elevator doesn't go directly to the lounge. And filet mignon is not on the menu. That's roughing it.
And we swore we'd never be like that, but you know what? It happened.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, I'm totally, totally a relaxed traveler anymore. I don't do the hard stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I like room service.
Yep,
Me and Josie Earp, we like room service.
Yes. Oh, I know. I mean, I just thought, and especially if you've had a grueling day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you don't want to forgo any of the luxuries of a mattress.
Yeah.
No.
How did you kind of prepare your, I can't help but ask this, you know, your feet to do this? I mean,
you know? It's interesting because that was the largest problem through the entire walk, is that from like my ankles down, it just, you could never really prepare or get your feet to feel great. you know, and it was so interesting because I started out the first 80 miles or 85, I think it was, and I had just a regular pair of Merrell hiking boots or hiking shoes on. Well, by the time I was done with that, my feet were so swollen, I couldn't wear that anymore. It was a size 6. So I thought, okay, I need to go up to the next size. So I went and I bought another pair for the next round. Well, even that became too small because what was happening is that I was learning along the way how I had to wrap my feet and I had to put moleskin on each toe and then I had to put kind of like a cast-like material on my baby toe because it would rub for like 80 miles no matter what I was wearing. And so you learned that, you know, I had to start wearing compression socks. Hey, I really sound really old now that I'm thinking about it.
Wow. I can imagine a room clerk as you come staggering through the front door in your clown shoes. And
no, but, you know,
so that's... then I had to have, like, toe socks on because you couldn't have your toes rubbing together it would create blisters there.
Right.
So I started learning all these different hiking accoutrements that I had to add, and I thought, oh my God, by the time I get to Sonoma, I'm going to be wearing clown shoes.
Well, you know, but what an interesting kind of observation because, you know, think about other people that have traveled, you know, so many folks that came overland eventually were walking. You know, if you just think of, you know, I don't think we think about that a lot.
Right.
Or our military in the West that we're not the cavalry, you know, that we're walking, you
infantry.
Know. Yeah. So
and
we have so much more at our fingertips today to help as you're just sharing all of the tools that you discovered, you know, that were not available then. So that's just a really interesting.
Well, and the Friars discovered the mission. Well, you know, it was Winipora Serra that started the mission project.
Right.
You know, and there was walking up. I mean, they were wearing, like, little rope sandals.
Right.
Now, granted, I think they were on, like, a horse or a donkey a lot of the times, but still.
Well, you learn.
I think it was just a part of life back then.
Well, you learn why so many people wanted to be on horseback.
Right? Yes. Right? Exactly.
Your feet,
I
for
wanted
sure.
to a few times.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question that I formulated in my little brain as I was reading your book. Now, did you hit all the missions in numerical order, or did you just follow them going up the coast?
I followed them going up the coast.
Okay,
it just so happens that San Diego was the first one built,
right.
And it's in San Diego, and then Sonoma is the last one. So,
right.
But the ones in between were built in all different order. In fact, Winipora Serra only built 8 of them,
right.
And then he passed away. And then the other friars and padres and priests came in and finished up the rest of the 21.
Right, right. To our listeners, if you want to call and talk to Maggie, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. And if you want to know anything about walking 800 miles to 21 missions, this is the gal to ask. Now, I got the fact. I think I understand your hopscotch method here. You would take the train to the last mission and start from there.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So
yes.
You wouldn't go all the way back home and then walk all the way back up there again.
Right. She'd stop.
No. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So for example, I ended at the San Juan Capistrano mission.
Right.
I took the train home. The next month, I took the train up to San Juan Capistrano and then walked
up to
San Gabriel in Los Angeles.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, though, it started getting where I was so far north. Like, when I got into, like, getting around Salinas and that stuff, the train was taking, like, 12 to 14 hours.
Right.
And it was just adding too much travel time. So I said, okay, I need to plug through this, and I need to start flying up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they stop everywhere.
And, you know, I need to
kind
of redo this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that train stops at every single podunk town along the way.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. And then, you know, they get delayed, et cetera.
Right, right.
And, you know, so you know, I would go to Santa Barbara. And then, unfortunately, what has happened is halfway through the walk, my father passed away. He lived back in Florida. And so he had passed away from a stroke unexpectedly. And so I needed to go back to Florida for his memorial and his funeral, et cetera. And so when I came back, I had taken a month off. So I had to recoup that time by adding it on the next month, because I'm a travel journalist by trade, as you had said in the beginning of the show.
Right.
I write for newspapers, etc. And what had happened is, before I started this walk, I contacted some newspapers, and the San Diego Union-Tribune said to me, I love this idea. We're going to run it the first weekend of January. That Sunday, and it's going to be a new year, new you, so you have a deadline. I need you to get it to us by the beginning of December. So I had to finish the 800 miles and get the article written and the photos, et cetera, by December. So I didn't have the luxury to just kind of take a couple months off.
Right.
So I had to come back and jump right in.
Right.
And just try to make up those miles. You know, I ended up walking about 155 miles then, when I came back that month to
right.
Recoup the miles.
And you did 1 month where you did two separate walks. You
that
did
was
them
it.
Together.
That was that month.
Yeah, I just went
up and I said, okay, I'm going to just walk
finish
it all. And let me tell you, that was so grueling.
Oh, I bet.
It was so grueling when I got there. It was grueling also because I was walking after, you know, the whole death of my father. So I had two things to combat, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so it was a really, mentally and physically, a really tough walk. But what was interesting is that, you know, people would read about this.
Right.
And this goes back to where I say that people are really wonderful. I mean, there were so many people who just rallied around. They were like, you know what, we're going to walk with you. I had a gentleman from Santa Barbara, and his wife was not a big walker, you know, and he was like, hey, I'll walk with you. My wife's not a big walker. Nice man. His name's Jim Lutz. He and his wife had put us up, me and my friends, when we were walking through Santa Barbara, and he ended up walking 450 of the miles with me.
Wow.
Yeah, it just was wonderful, and my nephew flew out from Philly and walked
right.
with me, and my other nephew,
that.
And, you know, just people from all over,
right.
you know, started walking with me. I had 3, 4, and 5 people walking with me at a time,
uh-huh.
you know, finishing up from Central to Northern California.
Now, you know, when you went through Simi Valley, if I'd have known, I'd have driven right next to you slow with a cattle prod, you know, not letting you slow down. Say, move it, Maggie. Come on, let's go. You're losing time. You're burning daylight.
So, no way. I would have jumped onto the hood and taken a ride at that point, probably.
Turn on the AC. I'm in the back seat.
So, Maggie, when you and walkers are walking together, did you find that you were talking most of the time, or did you have moments where you just, you know, you're just walking in silence, or you're telling stories?
That
or?
Is so... Okay, we were talking most of the time, and the thing that I found was so interesting was that, you know, if you meet a complete stranger, so you meet them, but now all of a sudden you're walking 8 hours a day for days and days and
right.
days, you're talking the whole time, and, you know, you have a group of people, so all of a sudden you're saying, okay, so if you could be a color, what color would you be? You're starting to ask crazy questions. What animal would you want to be? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's... we really did. We were asking questions like, okay, you can have lunch with anybody dead or alive. Who's it going to be? I mean, it's like...
There's another book in there.
You're passing the time.
Yeah.
I mean, the time just would just figure how many hours in a day you'd be walking.
Right.
You know, so it was really fun. No, we were talking. The only time I wasn't was when my husband and I were walking.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then, you know, we were like, okay, I tried playing the game with him. If you could be any animal, what would you be? And he just looked at me like, are you serious?
A gazelle so I could get there in a hurry.
So in order to kind of navigate your way, were you using what kind of maps? And because you obviously weren't walking the 101. I mean, you were having to navigate. How did you plan your trip?
Well, you know, it was interesting because the gentleman I told you about, Butch, who had walked it, he had, you know, the forethought to say, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write down all my directions. So he literally wrote down, walk 2 miles, turned left, walk 5 miles, turn here, for the entire walk. He then turned it into kind of like a book with, you know, three ring binder kind of thing. And so I contacted him and I asked him, can I buy that? And he said, sure, I have a bunch of them that I sell. So I bought that from him. And then in conjunction with that, I would, every, you know, route that I was going to take, I would then go onto Google Maps and I would compare the two. Because we deviated, myself and whomever I was walking with, we deviated from his route a number of times because sometimes sometimes he was like really, like one time he was literally walking on the 101, and I am just not that brave, So, and plus I just, there was numerous times I felt really like I was in danger, you know, when I was walking over passes and on two lane, really thin roads with no shoulder. You know, so when I had a chance to walk on the beach, I would walk on the beach. It would be great, you know, whereas his directions didn't include that, I would do it if I could. So, yeah, I had a couple of them. Then Jim, my friend that walked with me, he also had gone on and found some different ways to walk. There's still people that are walking this. I was the 11th person to finish it. I think now there's been about 16 people.
Wow.
And they're all kind of trying to, you know, find different routes, and they all kind of write about it on this California Mission Walkers Facebook page if they found a good route.
It's so interesting.
It truly is.
It really is.
Yeah.
What did you carry in your rucksacks? I know you guys carried rucksacks or backpacks.
Yeah.
What was
well,
in,
you know,
what was in there?
Well, it was interesting because we learned very quickly that less is better.
Right.
Because
oh,
you had to carry it all 4 days. And so at first you thought, well, I need this, I need this, I need this. And then you quickly, after about 1 or 2 to 2 months, I said, no, I don't. Who needs to brush their hair? I don't need to brush my hair.
They'll have brushes at the motel.
I'm wearing a hat. What do I need a hairbrush for?
I literally got down to where I was like, toothbrush, sunscreen, a hair twisty.
I
got this great idea because I always then was carrying my dirty clothes. I thought, why? So I went to Costco and I bought like a huge pack of white t-shirts for like $10 or something. And I packed 4 t-shirts each time. And then I would wear them and just throw them out at the end of a day or two. Then wear the next one, throw it out, and the nice, or leave it in the room if whatever. And then what would happen is the last day of walking for that month, when I was the most tired, my pack was the least heavy.
Right.
You know, and I had to carry my own water, so I had to account for that weight. There were parts in Central California where we would walk for 16, 17 miles, not one store, no water, nothing.
Right.
You know, so you had to really be prepared. So we're carrying pounds of water with us.
Well, sure, because a gallon of water is, 40 pounds?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I really had to, you know, like I said, I looked rough. I looked rough when I was walking. A couple times, like, my feet were so sore. One time I was walking, and I just stopped in a drugstore, and I bought a pair of slippers, and I walked 17 miles in a pair of slippers.
And they held up.
I tell you, I will do a testimonial for that. It's like, yes, they held up. I couldn't believe it, you know? So, yeah, let me tell you, you know, vanity goes out the window when you're doing that. So, yes, And the interesting thing is that we also had to pack, like, granola bars and, you know, block shots, you know, those kind of, like, gel bars and that kind of thing, and that's weight, too.
Sure. How would you say the trip changed you? And if yes, how? In what way?
I don't know. You know, if it changed me, you know, I think here's the way it changed me. One is that I realized that friendships are so important, you know, that friendships and family and that kind of thing really is kind of the heartbeat of life. I learned that, you know, when called upon, there is a reserve really deep inside of one. And, you know, that I said earlier, you know, humanity is good, that really the majority of them are very good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably what I took away from it all.
Is there any one of the 21 missions that really moved you, or, you know, was memorable of the 21 if you had to pick one?
I think that I couldn't pick one because what surprised me is how different they all were. And they were different according to where they were in the state. So, for example, I was at one that was San Miguel, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And in fact, the town does not even have a traffic light. It just has a stop sign. And so it is this small mission that years ago they had an earthquake, maybe about 10 years ago. And so the state came in and said, you have to retrofit this mission and get it up to par. And so they held mass for 5 years in the yard underneath the cross until they retrofitted the mission so everybody could then go to church in the mission again. I mean, little sweet, sweet mission. And then in comparison, the Carmel mission, it's in the middle of a very wealthy area. It's big. It's where Winiparous Sarah is buried. He's buried right under the altar there. And so here's this beautiful, ornate, gorgeous mission with a really large parish. So, you know, it's kind of like the dichotomy of the two, but both of them were wonderful, mm-hmm, if that makes sense. You know, sure, in their own way, they were wonderful.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I couldn't pick one. I just, you know, they all were really interesting in their own way.
Years and years ago, I wound up in a little town, San Juan Bautista.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a mission there.
Yep.
And it's kind of off the main street. And I kind of walked around the main street for a while because it's very cool. It looks like it's back in the 1870s. And I was amazed at the fact that they were still baking bread in the original stone ovens that they had dug out of boulders. And I turned a corner, and there sat this mission. I didn't even know there was a mission there. And it was kind of, I want to say dilapidated, but that's not a good word. Run down, mm-hmm, probably. Mm-hmm. But I understand they've done work on that one, too.
So they've conserved it?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
they have. Bautista, San Antonio, which is on the old land that was owned by Hearst.
Okay.
Hearst, you know, the magazine mogul,
right,
Hearst,
right,
who
right
owned Hearst Castle.
San
he had
Simeon
owned a bunch of land, and one of the missions is on his old land.
Well, I mean,
and that one's been renovated, too. Yeah, I mean, it costs so much to keep these missions running.
Oh, sure.
And these small towns don't really have the money to keep them up the way they're supposed to. They have to do it little by little.
And I've noticed that a lot of the missions are populated by friars. A lot of them have friars instead of priests. Or both, I guess.
What's interesting is when one of the people that I told you about that was following me was a gentleman named Bob Brunson. And Bob Brunson is a third order Franciscan friar.
Right. I remember reading about him.
But basically what it means is that, you know, they follow the teachings of St. Francis of Assisi, but they can get married and have families, et cetera. He's right, married and has a wonderful family, et cetera. But so he asked the diocese or whomever it was if he could wear the robe. And so Bob and his wife had put myself and friends up a couple times in their house in Monterey. And then he walked a number of times with me. And it was really amazing because he walked in his robe. And he did start with, I think, sandals. And he said, uh-uh. And he switched to sneakers really quickly. He had the best sense of humor. I mean, wickedly great sense of humor. He was a blast to walk with. And so, but he would stop people would stop in the middle of the road and they go, Padre, you know, would you pray for my, you know, aunt, or Padre, you know, for the reposal of the soul of my whatever. It was really interesting. And he stopped and spoke with every person that wanted to talk to him. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating. One of the things that was so fascinating about the walk is just with each person that walked with me would bring their personality or a new adventure. So that would happen with Bob. And then I walked with a friend of mine. Her name's Marie Horn, and she's into something called geocaching.
Right.
Where I guess you use the satellite.
That was fun when you wrote. Yeah, you wrote about that. Yeah.
And so she geocached the whole time we were walking, and we were finding like these little treasures all along the road that we were walking on. It was really fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody brought their personality and their fun things to each walk, which was wonderful.
Okay. Now we're going to get into the serious stuff. while you were walking, and I know that, you know, 4 days a month and 8 days in December, you had to have sat at a 5-star hotel at one point in your travels and gone up and probably scraped a little bit of the dirt off, gone down to the bar and had a vodka tonic or five.
Or something.
And thought to yourself, boy, this is dumb and stupid. I want to go home. Did that ever occur? Or something similar?
No. Nope. You know, I think I thought, I thought about this so long and hard before I did it that I thought, okay, I've signed up for it. Let's just see it through. There were times when, I guess I should say, there were times when I thought, what, you know, wow, why did I choose to do this? But I don't know if there were times where I thought, okay, why am I doing this? I think I've done enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the two differences.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I didn't think I was going to quit, but there were times I will say, and they would happen, like, for example, I was on a road and it was about 100 degrees. It was Central California. It was about 100 degrees. I was pouring water over my head. And at that point, I cried. Mm-hmm. I said, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And then pulled it back in and headed on. Now, I figured I started, I might as well finish it. But I questioned my sanity maybe once or twice. Yeah.
No, I'm sure you did.
We always ask every author a very important question. The show is called The Writer's Block, and we know that you were writing this book kind of as you went every night as you were back in your motel or hotel room. But even overall, as a writer, do you experience writer's block? And if so, how do you get around it?
Oh, yes. I mean, I don't think there's a writer out there that doesn't experience it. And when you're on deadline, that just even puts more of the angst in you. You know, oh, God, I'm never going to think of this. So, you know, what I'll do is I will just go to my laptop and type out stream of thought, stream mm-hmm. of thought, stream of thought, stream of thought, stream of thought, stream of thought. You know, just get everything that I'm thinking about this thing out and then go back and start to form something. And it might be the middle paragraph. You know, it might be like, this has to be in here somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then with that starts to come the opening paragraph mm-hmm. or the concluding paragraph or whatever. You know, it isn't always written like first line, second line, third line.
Right.
You know, and so I just do it over the course of days. So I try real early to start something if I'm on a deadline because I hate to feel that crunch.
Well, I noticed that, you know, that it was written kind of like a blog.
Yeah, it's a journal, but it's more like a blog.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny? It was never going to be a book.
Right, that was our next question. Yeah.
I've written the first book, The Privileged Pooch, that you had said about traveling with dogs. Wonderful. My dog and I stayed at 78 hotels. We were in heaven. I mean, we'd come home, we'd be like, this dump? You know, because they were all upper scale hotels that we stayed at. So whenever we came home, where's room service?
That's always my first question.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dog got very spoiled. So anyway, when I was done writing that book, I thought, no, I'm not going to write a book for a while. And then when I had all these people said to me, this has to be a book. And I was like, no, book is a four-letter word in our household now, you know? And then I read through it and I thought, yeah, I think it does because it isn't just like a history book. Mm-hmm. It's not like you too can. It's here's the nitty-gritty. There's going to be days where you hate life.
Right.
And then there's going to be days, and this is the truth, where I just would open my arms and go, oh, my gosh, this is fabulous. You know, and so it was raw enough and real enough that I felt like I had to, you know, I had to do it. I had to put it together, and I had to put it together the way it was written, start all over.
Is it almost like a coffee table book?
Yes, it is, because my first book was a paperback, mm-hmm. and then somebody said, and then I thought, well, this has to be something that you put down and you pick up and maybe read five pages and then you put it down and maybe pick it up again and look at pictures.
Right.
You know, it's not meant to sit down and read like a novel.
Right, right. Well, you have some absolutely fabulous pictures in there of the people you've walked with and some of the scenery and the missions and...
It was
very interesting. They all were taken on my iPhone because I didn't want to have, you know, I had my iPhone with me, so I didn't want any extra weight, you know?
Sure.
Well, so they were all taken on my iPhone.
It's very engaging reading to our listeners. We would encourage you to get this because it's a wonderful read. You can pick it up and put it down and not feel like you're going to lose a thread of, you know, what's happening. It's very authentic. You are a very authentic writer. It was, to me, very compelling. I'm not sure it made me want to do the walk, but it kind of made me want to at least experience the missions. And I haven't seen that many of them the years that we've lived out here in California. And it kind of made me want to begin to, you know, try to get out and see more of them. I'm not sure I could do the walk.
Yeah. Well, it's a long hump. I mean, you know, you have the San Fernando mission.
I know
right
we have a variety of missions within a very small radius even of living here. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and you know what? I wouldn't recommend, you know, I always tell people unless you are totally invested into this, into a huge endeavor.
Right.
I don't even really suggest anybody to do it.
Right.
I think that you can drive them and see all the missions.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, or if you, I tell people also just maybe walk one section and you'll get a feel for what it's like and then determine it after that.
Right. What is the name of the walk in France to Spain?
Camino de Santiago.
Right.
I'm not doing it.
No. Our engineer here wants to walk that.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you do know, Ronan, that that's 500 and some odd miles
and
across
it has,
mountains.
Well, now, and it has some infrastructure.
That one has really good infrastructure. They have hostels you stay at. They have cafes.
Right. They have way stops.
You can sit and have coffee.
Right.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, they've really made it easy for the walkers, but rest.
It's still It has more support for the walkers. Yeah,
But still a long hump.
So, what's your next project that you're working on?
Well, I don't. You know, I went to Paris a few years ago with my dog once again, and I thought, well, I'm going to do maybe the Privileged Pooch in Paris, but then I thought, man, I'm not sure. So I'm kind of mulling that around, whether it will be a children's book. Yes, I know, another book. Three, and that's it. The trilogy, and that's it.
Never say never.
Not sure. just mulling it around.
But you've been all over the world, and you have wonderful photos on your website. Yeah, in fact, let's take a moment quick because we're running out of time. How do people find you? How do they find the book? Give us a rundown on all that.
Okay, so my website is Travel with Maggie, and that's maggie.com.
Okay.
They can go on there. My book is on there. They click on book, and they can order it, or go on Amazon, and it'll just put in On a Mission, and my name, Maggie Espinosa, and it'll come up. And they can even contact me on my website and send me questions or whatever.
Right. And that's Espinosa with an S.
Correct.
Yes, that's right. Okay. S-A at the end instead of Z-A.
Correct.
And I think if they order on Amazon, are you able to actually personalize it for them, Maggie, if they want to?
Yes. So I can just put their name in. If they put that in the order, then I can write to whomever and sign however they want me to sign it.
Excellent. Well, you know what? It's been a hoot talking to you, and this hour has flown by. And we really appreciate it. You taking time to talk with us this evening, this great Thursday, as it is. And we'd love having you. And if you're going to write another book, let us know. The bookie will put you on in a nanosecond.
I will do that. And thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate
you
having
being
me on
with
the
us.
Show.
Yes, this has been great fun.
And enjoy that mug when it gets there. She'll be there tomorrow.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. It was great being on the show.
Loved having you. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It was a wonderful book to read, wasn't it?
It was fun. It was fun.
It was really fun.
I'm really partial to pictures and books. So, I mean, she had like 6-8 pictures at the end of every chapter. So it was kind of fun.
And she mentions the California Mission Walkers. They do have a Facebook page.
They do.
And when I was preparing for the show, Jim, I listened to a wonderful podcast of an interview that she did with a group called California, now I'm not going to find it in my notes, the California Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kind of a website with interviews dedicated to the history of the missions. And so if you've got a fourth grader, you're living in California, and you've got a fourth grader working on the mission project, this is a terrific resource and website to go to. And I think it's just CaliforniaFrontier.com. But he's doing, it was wonderful. I had a fun time. I downloaded a map of the missions from there.
Yeah, and, I noticed you had it in your hand.
It was wonderful.
So. And also, if you go on her website, you can. There's all kinds of TV shows she's been on that, that you can catch those and watch those on YouTube. And there's several podcasts that you can pick up and listen to Maggie. Not that you aren't going to be enthralled by having her on the show here tonight with us, but
you need more.
She's a lot of fun. She's a great guest, and we really enjoyed her. And we're serious, Maggie. Come back and see us. And this July, which we're half over with now. Next week, we have Jeff MacArthur, the writer of Two Gun Heart, and we do have a new book with him, and if you haven't got it already, I'll make sure that you get it, and that's another book we get to read next week.
Mm-hmm.
The 27th, we have Gary Phillips, and he's got a new book out about Obama.
Ooh.
And he's got a new Asian pulp comic book out that we're trying to figure out how to get open now. But we just got some word from him, and he's looking forward to being back on the show again. And we have a lot of interesting and relevant offers coming up. We have Craig Johnson coming up at August 24th. Mm-hmm. Mike Bond and Rochelle Weisloff-Fields is a returner, as is Craig Johnson. September 7th, we have a very special two-hour show. We'll have Richard Palinelli in the studio with us, and Kathleen Rogers will be on the phone. And if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, that number, write it down, is 818-602-4929. And we will be discussing agents and publicists, indie books, traditional publishing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just promising to be a really, really good show. And as a teaser for now, we have some coming up in the very near future, two exciting new authors. One is Bianca Murray, her book, Hum, If You Don't Know the Words. It's about growing up in South Africa as a young child during apartheid. And as a special treat, we have author John Sanford going to be on with us April of next year. And we're looking forward to having a conversation with John. He writes all the Prey books. And
so we're booking 2018 already.
We are actually through, I believe, the bookie told me we're through March.
So if you're listening and you're a writer and you'd like to join us on this show, what do they need to do, Jim?
They need to get a hold of the bookie at guestwb@yahoo.com. She can tell you everything that's relevant, how to make things happen. And I will tell you that if you're using a Mac computer, please format a PDF before you send it out to us, because we cannot open page documents.
Yes, we're on Windows.
Yeah, we're those, 90% of the country that still is on Windows. And other than that, we have some fun stuff coming up, and we really, really, truly hope that you stay listening, and we thank you for your listening to us and being part of our 400,000-plus listeners. And again, thank you, Maggie, for being with us. And I guess we will be back with you next Thursday with author Jeff MacArthur. And once again, we are out of here.